There you go. I couldn't do it. You had to do it. Hi, everyone. My name's Miles, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. And yeah, it's really nice to be here. Jan came to our meeting. We go to a regular meeting on Saturday morning, a free thinkers meeting, and she asked if someone would like to share. So I was kicking around, so I put my hand up, and so here I am. And yeah, it's always a lovely opportunity to get a chance to. You know, to talk a little with other alcoholics, and hopefully something I say might help someone who might be struggling a little bit. Or and I was thinking, you know, this tradition goes back years and years, doesn't it? A person sharing their experience, strength, and hope, right back to, you know, when Bill and Bob were just forming the before AA, and they were hanging around the Oxford group and getting into trouble, you know, sharing their experience. They were called the Alcohol Squadron, and the Oxford group were very glad to get rid of them when they finally ooped it and started AA. So and so this goes back all that way, and it's you know, I have a really fond spot for our history, and I'm only here because of that. I'm only here because of the message that's been passed down so freely, and the love and guidance and tough love many a time. Things that I didn't really want to do were probably the most rewarding when I finally plucked up the courage to have a go at it. You know, there's a line in the book that says, "Each day somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic shares his experience, strength, and hope with another." At its heart, this program is simple, and I love that because, you know, here we all are. I'm in England. We've got an Irish meeting, and we've got people mainly. Predominantly US people. I got sober in Reykjavik, Iceland. I moved to America after a couple of years of sobriety, and I spent 18 years there. So the bulk of my sobriety was spent in America, and I'm really grateful for that. I also spent a couple of years in Canada, and I've had about 12 years in England in my recovery years. It is my birthday this month. It's 35 years this month. So I couldn't get in there because I was muted. I couldn't unmute. Anyway, it's one day at a time, and you know, it's been a long old road. So how do I talk about 35 years and what led up to it? I can't. It's been varied. It's been varied, but the wonderful thing is I haven't had to drink, and there've been times when my life has been really, really tough in recovery. Before recovery, I'd actually tried suicide a couple of times. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 36, been living in Reykjavik, Iceland, and I didn't think I was an alcoholic. It took hanging around in meetings long enough to clear up a little bit and start listening a little bit and start getting nearer the truth. You know, they say for in early recovery, how does it work? Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. None of those things were easy to just grab hold of, and they took time, and they still do. But as I started getting nearer the truth, I began to see that alcohol had been leading a lie. It was living a lie. It was, you know, it was telling me things that weren't true. And amazing how those defense mechanisms come up, you know, denial, rationalization, intellectualization, blame, all of these reasons that kept me drinking when really I was degrading. Ironically, though, my degrading, my way of looking at it, which looking back at it right now, does seem a little odd, was to I went swimming every day, and I went to macrobiotic restaurants, and I was living in Iceland, one of the cleanest, purest places in the world. So I figured that gave me credence or time to drink that extra more. And because I was surrounded by a lot of Vikings, notoriously, you know, well known for their drinking behavior and berserking. The word berserk comes from the Vikings. And so I was around a lot of hard drinking people, and I could slip into that. And you know, there's always this sense of I'm not quite as bad as. But my not quite as badass had led me to suicide attempts twice, to a lot of depression, a lot of isolation. I'd never learned the language there, and I'd been there for all of those years. They speak really good English, but So I was in my own head quite a lot. I had a good job. I worked as a, I was an illustrator in a small graphic design studio, but my company loved to drink as well. So there were lots of enablers around. My boss and I used to go out to, on a Friday night, we'd buy a bottle of whiskey or whatever we could afford, and we go to the local hotel and have a sauna there, take the bottle in, because we knew that alcohol works really well when you're in a sauna. And then we go on to just binge all weekend. I found out that I was making homemade beer in massive amounts. I also had a little grow garden of marijuana with grow lights, and I figured that that was fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I was brewing about 350 bottles of beer a month, and I had all these fair weather friends, especially with the marijuana. And that all stopped when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I ended up going to a detox, which I didn't need. I'd actually stopped myself, and I'd started going to AA. And amazing, really, I haven't had a drink since my first AA meeting, and it was a candlelit meeting in Reykjavik. And I went in because some friends had told me that they thought I was an alcoholic, and I wanted things to change. I didn't think alcohol was my problem, but I was willing to give it a try. And so I'd stopped drinking, and I went in, and there was a chair in the middle, and it was candlelit, which was nice because I didn't feel quite so ashamed or visible. And there was a chap there who I'd always looked up to. He was always the coolest guy at the party. He got the best drugs and the best drink and the prettiest girl, and he was there. And he came up to me and he said, "Miles, we've been saving your seat." And he pointed to the seat in the middle, and I hated that. I thought, "How dare you? I'm here, but I'm not like you, you know." And but little by little, I began to realize that yes, I am an alcoholic, and I began to identify similarities and not differences. So that little group in Reykjavik, it was called the Midnight Sun Group, and I was able to go there for 2 years, and I am ever grateful for that. When I first came back to England some years later, I thought to myself, I don't know whether I could have done it in some of these English groups. The level of because we were in this fairly dark, isolated little island, we got a group of foreigners in this group, and from all over the place. We had a Basque from Spain, and a Swede, and a few Icelanders, an Air Force base. Some Americans came. People from France and Spain, all of these flotsam and jetsam people like myself, who'd ended up in Reykjavik and met their downfall or their salvation, and ended up in this Midnight Sun group. So I'm very, very fond of what happened there. They taught me to do regular stuff, and my story is that I have no complaints about regular AA. Yes, I can. I go to secular now, and I don't go to regular AA meetings. There are some things I disagree with, but I've been very fortunate that mainly the people that have given me all the help have been kind and loving, and they haven't told me what to do. They've not displayed that critical parent thing, which was what I really needed. And I learned through doing the steps with people. I worked through the steps. The first year, and they got me making coffee, and coming to the meetings and actually showing up, because I'd been so isolated that I wasn't very, very good with people, and it was hard for me. But the love and the warmth and the reassurance, and because it was a small group, and we actually had a little restaurant we went to every Friday night that we booked, and we got 20% discount, and we got this little corner, so we'd have soup and salad. So after the Friday meeting, we'd all go out to this little restaurant together, and that after the meeting thing was really, really helpful. We go around someone's house, and I remember seeing the movie "My Name's Bill W" and stuff like that. So I started hanging around with AAs. I had to give up all the people that I'd been hanging around with before. I did go into rehab because I wasn't feeling that great after a few months, and didn't understand a word that went on. It was the middle of winter. It was Christmas and December, and it's dark there, and the snow was was driving sideways, and it was not a pleasant experience. But had a friend come in, and who'd been sober a few years, and I really thought he was going to die when I last saw him. I thought, man, that guy is really bad. But he'd been sober 6 years, and he was doing really well, and he was passing on. I now know that he was passing on, what had been so freely given to him. So that's where I started. I mean, I'm not going to talk much about how I got there, really, but one of the wonderful things about AA for me is it's been a springboard or a design for living that has helped me go out and look for more things. And I remember in my first year, I said to my sponsor, "I want to do this. I want to go and do that." And he said, "Miles, icing on the cake, let's work these steps first. First things first. Easy does it. You can't run before you walk." And I realized that I wanted things yesterday. This sort of instant gratification that was so much part of my immature way of being. And I didn't know how to, really work for something and not get results, or not be concerned if the results don't come. And learning that aspect of recovery, has been a continuation that I really have to fine tune, but I'm much better at it now, and it really, really helped. So I have in my periods of recovery, I've done a lot of therapy. I worked as an illustrator for many years, and I moved to America after a couple of years, and started off, did really well with my career. I mean, not massively famous or anything, but just to be a practicing illustrator and have a couple of agents and not die of famine was a major sort of success, really. But I lost that job; it disappeared, and through no fault of my own, just because of the way politics and economy is. And I was about 10 years sober then. I'd had wonderful fortune in starting off at. My first group in America was Soma's Serendipity. I was about 30 or 40 miles north of New York City. And I threw myself in with AA people. And again, I've done that all my life now. And wonderful things happen. I got jobs with people painting and decorating until I could get my job off. My sponsor's sponsor gave me a beat up old car, which I loved. It was as old as the hills. It got moss grown on the roof, and I used to love it. I'd go down to New York City in it and chase the taxes out of the way. It was so bad, that I didn't need to worry about the state of it. But yeah, lots and lots of help from people. And my sponsor there, he worked at Stepping Stones, which some of you may know of. People interested in AA history, that was Bill and Lois's only home. And it's now been kept ever since as a museum, it's a New York historic landmark. And because of our traditions, it hasn't got. Yeah, sometimes we have AA meetings there, and there'll be a picnic every year, Lois Wilson annual picnic. And I became a groundskeeper there as another odd job, and that was wonderfully enriching. I love the history. I learned a lot while I was there. I met people who travelled all over the world as on a sort of, pilgrimage. There's a lot of people out there whose heart is so enmeshed in sort of gratitude and an interest in the history that they'll travel miles. So for me, I was meeting lots of really, really nice people. And I, began doing tour guides around when the guide wasn't there, and I hung around there for 4 or 5 years. And the wonderful thing is I don't want to talk too much about this, but my sponsor's sponsor was a crusty old guy. He was one of those old guys who say, "Take the cotton wool out of your ears and put it in your mouth." And I thought, oh, geez, I'm going to be working with this guy. He's not my cup of tea. But, there you go. My assumptions, my prejudices. After a while, I began to realize what a wonderfully loving, kind, and fine gentleman Vaughan was. He was the guy who gave me the car. But we'd come in from doing chores, whether it was, snow shoveling or painting or weeding or, leaf blowing or whatever. And we'd come into the kitchen at Stepping Stones, and make a cup of coffee. And the very table that we sat at was a little galvanized metal table. And it was the very table that Ebby had actually come across and passed the message on to Bill when Bill had slid a bottle of pineapple juice across. You know, he was, Ebby's coming, I got someone to drink with. And of course, Ebby had already got sober with the Oxford group and he was passing the message on. And that was when Bill, you know, he couldn't argue. He thought Ebby was crazy. You know, some of you know the story. And it was after that that Bill went into Towns Hospital and finally got sober. And then from there, you know, went on to Akron and met Bob. And that is the beginning of us. And I'm so pleased that AA has really expanded and that, you know, I can come to secular AA and I don't have to do a lot of the things that, you know, I see in some regular meetings. You know, I'm old enough and I've done enough sort of study and growth, I think, I hope, to be able to, you know, point my finger at certain aspects of our big book and certainly the 12 and 12. I'm not a fan of the writing there, but I love the big book, but there are areas where, yeah, you didn't get it right. But you know what? What I know about Bill Wilson and certainly Dr. Bob, I think they'd really approve of secular AA. And it hurts me when I hear people come in who've really had hard experiences in regular AA and they've thrown it all out without actually getting a chance to really see that, you know, a lot of the, for me anyway, a lot of the people who started this were really good people and they did the best they could, you know, when they could. Anyway, so you know, one of the things getting sober helped me with was, you know, it was my attachment and my abandonment issues. That was the core. Alcohol was a symptom. Bottles were the symptom. Underneath that lay the problem. And the problem was, I found out after a lot of therapy, it was about abandonment wounds, mother wounds, and you know, and it's very common nowadays, you know, but 35 years ago. There wasn't so much, you know, sort of interest in what happened, you know, what happened when we were children. And nowadays it's all over the place. Trauma is, you know, it's the word, isn't it now? And you know, and I'm really pleased because, you know, my trauma was I was brought up by a heartbroken mother. And she was lovely and she did the very best she did. And she's a beautiful woman, but she was heartbroken. And in her illness, she passed her trauma on to me as a tiny baby. She'd lost her first daughter, my lost sister Kathleen, to leukemia at the age of two. So my mother and father knew that Kathleen was going to die, and you know, yeah, still, you know, as I find myself feeling this as I say it, that the heartbreak that they went through when you know when she lost Kathleen, there was no help then. It was grin and bear it. It was, you know, no help. So my mother soldiered on, but you know, I came along next, and you know, there were certain things that happened. It was this kind of approach avoidance, and I'm aware of that now that I've grown up with, you know, attachment and abandonment issues, and I know it's not uncommon there, but you know, AA has been the sort of start, the impetus of being able to sort of open up and take those onion layers off more and more. And I'm really glad that, you know, where I am right now. I mean, there've been all sorts of things happened in recovery. I've had two careers. I lost my illustration career and I went up to the local the local rehab to see if I could get a van driver's job in New York. Spoke to the guy there, the boss, and you know, I was talking about my AA stuff and I was sponsoring people and I had a sponsor and I was really working at Stepping Stones and, you know, kind of dedicated to it all. And they said, well, we could have you on as a night counselor. We have, you know, unqualified people provided they, you know, have got a handle. So I worked at this place, Arms Acres in New York for about 8 years and was really, really good for me. But it was also really bad for me because I went studying as well to get a qualification. So my life was working in a rehab, going to school to get a qualification, and being AA. And to tell you the truth, it got really, that was, too much of a good thing, and I'd learned by that stage that I need balance in my life, and I've been able to do one, great things like I love fly fishing. I used to go all the rivers around there and off to the Beaverkill in the Catskills, and then fly fishing for bass in the on Long Island Sound, and I had a motorbike. So I had lots of nice things, but I found myself really in this place where recovery and addiction was just getting too much. So I didn't go to meetings for a while then, and it was a difficult time. I mean, I didn't feel like drinking, but I was getting pretty jaded. So now it's good to have sort of be in the middle way, and not have, I don't do that anymore. I did actually come back to England some years later to look after my mother, and that I'm really grateful I had that opportunity to look after her and stay with her and until she passed away. And that probably wouldn't have happened if I hadn't got sober. I wouldn't have recognized that responsibility. That was one of the words in the rehab that we went to in Iceland. Had to go up to a plinth every day and say, "Yeah, hey, to Miles, jeg alkoholist, jeg alvidar. My name's Miles. I'm an alcoholic. I'm responsible today." And that word, "I am responsible," it's taken a long time getting there, and I still have vast sort of swaths of built-in irresponsibility or the desire to be irresponsible. But by and large, I try to do the next right thing these days, and try to keep my side of the street as clean as possible. So, yeah, I don't know what time. How am I doing for time? I've got one of the things that's been really useful for me in recovery is that since I've been back in England now, getting to do this secular meetings, I find I wish I could go to some local AA meetings, but around my area, I had been to them 10 years or so ago when I came back from America to look after mum. And I did it for a long time, and I began to think, I'm not feeling right here. I'm not feeling there's something, to that old saying, to thine own self be true. It gets more important as days go by. And I just realized that, you know what, this isn't doing me any good. In fact, it's doing me more harm than anything. So luckily, secular came up, and I've been going to this Raynham one. And we've got a great bunch of people there, and every Saturday morning is wonderful, and we get topics, and they're not just the usual topics. Or we've got a lot of long-term sobriety. We've got quite a few newcomers, and there's a lovely feeling of love and acceptance and tolerance and open-mindedness. And you'd think that, when we slacken the rules, that it might get chaotic or anarchistic, but no, it just runs lovely, and so I feel grateful for that. These days, meditation has become quite an important thing over the years. I first started going to a Buddhist temple in New York, just out of interest and curiosity, and over the years, I've been doing quite a few retreats, especially with a we've got an organization in England called the The Triratna. I think they're pretty much worldwide, but and I've been to a couple of outside retreats this year for 7 days at a time out in a field with 20 other people, and it's they call it a sangha, like what we call fellowship, and it's got a really similar parallel for me with with addiction recovery. Part of Buddhism is about freedom from suffering, and that craving leads to suffering, and there's a lot of similarities, but I do find a gentle, refreshing set of tasks to set myself to these days. So yeah, that and there's an online meeting called Recovery Dharma that I attend a couple of times a week out of America, and we do a little bit of meditation, and then we do some reading, and then a bit of sharing. And that's for people with addiction. So that's where where I find my, I find my refuge from myself and the way that the head can sometimes go. So Yeah, right now I'm just quite pleased with following what the Buddha called the middle way, which is not an extreme. And I was told in recovery, all or nothing people quite often end up with nothing, and I relate to that. So trying to find the middle way, the not too much, not too little, but the way of somewhere in between in my life. Not too many expectations, but not too little, yeah. I don't think I'll, I think I've spoken for a long time now. I remember in the early days they asked me, Miles, are you going to be a victim or a victor? And I can look back to the way I blamed, and right through a long period of recovery, I was still blaming. And it took numerous fourth steps and, lots of meditation on forgiveness. And, it's still one of the hardest things is loving myself, fully, and accepting myself fully. But it's getting better. And I might get a little closer by the time I leave this planet. I'm 71 now and feeling some of those aches and pains. I work as a gardener part time. I'm on a very small pension. I just rent a place. But life's pretty good, and it's quite simple these days. So, if you are new, just keep coming back. They told me to, don't give up even if your ass is falling off. For me, it was essential to have a sponsor. It was essential to have sponsees. It was essential for me to work through the steps on numerous occasions, and then be able to branch out and go to other, Coda and Al-Anon have been really helpful for me, and my codependency reared its head big time when I gave up the drink. I began to see, the drink is just a symptom. The other stuff is what needs taking care of once the drink's been put down. But it is hard putting the drink down and having the courage to stay put through those scary places in the early days. I just didn't. I felt so scared and inferior and useless. But people are there, to pass it on. Good people to pass on what's been given to them. And what do they say? When the student's ready, the teacher arrives. Something like that. Anyway, I'll shut up for now. But it's really good to be here. And yeah, thank you. Thanks.